Hello and welcome to the D3Football.com Around the Nation podcast for the week of November 19th, 2007. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And happy Thanksgiving, everyone. 16 teams will be spending their Thanksgiving on campus, usually with a light practice and a meal. And, of course, a second-round game 2 days later. How did they get there? Let's review. The biggest surprise of the weekend had to be North Carolina Wesleyan beating W&J. Keith, you and I both saw the same NC Wesleyan game, the opener at Wesley, and apparently came away with opposite impressions. Not the first time. I looked at NC Wesleyan and saw a team that had trouble hanging onto the ball. In fact, they ended up turning it over 25 times in 10 regular season games. And you saw...
I saw a team that matched up well with Wesley speed-wise and was going to give any other team that didn't have the speed that Wesley has a little bit of trouble. And we also know that Washington Jefferson didn't play the strongest schedule through no fault of their own. A lot of their games were Pacific President's Athletic Conference games, and you got to play who's on your schedule. But by the same token, if they hadn't seen a team that had the speed that North Carolina Wesleyan had, that could have been what gave them some of the trouble Saturday.
North Carolina Wesleyan comes away with the first round win, 35-34 in overtime. It's the first time that a number one seed has lost in the first round since the playoff expansion, although granted, for 6 years they got first round bye, so number one teams didn't have to play in the first round. Nonetheless, for an 8 seed to win, that's the first time for that as well.
Yeah, and that's certainly a momentous occasion, but by the same token, there have been some 8 seeds that have been competitive, and there was one on Saturday, Widener, even though it was playing second-seeded Case Western, it certainly had a chance to win, leading there late in the game.
Case Western Reserve coming up with a 21-20 win on a touchdown catch with 2 seconds left. But as we mentioned, 8 seed North Carolina Wesleyan advances. 8 seed Ithaca, lost to Mount Union 42-18. A loss is a loss is a loss, right? And by more than 3 touchdowns. But Mount Union hadn't given up anywhere near as many points all year.
No, they had those 6 straight shutouts coming into the playoffs, had given up a field goal, and then had a shutout before that. So basically had given up 3 points in the past 8 games. And Ithaca put up 18 on them, which it's kind of tough to have moral victories at this point because Ithaca's season is over and eliminated from the playoffs. But it's also fair to say that Ithaca was maybe the best team that Mountain Union has played all season. Capital was the only other playoff team out of the Ohio Athletic Conference, so maybe Ithaca should have been the best team that they played because the only playoff team besides Capital. But I guess it shows that Mountain Union does have some chinks in the armor, but you still have to put together a nearly perfect game to beat them.
I think we've talked previously about penalty yardage for Mountain Union. The Purple Raiders were assessed 146 yards in penalties compared to 46 for Ithaca. Dan Juvan did complete 19 of 39 passes for 324 yards. Season highs against Mountain Union, also highs for the first time since December of 2005.
Yeah, and going back to that game in December 2005, of course, was when Capitals' Rocky Mantello threw for 312 yards against them, and I think it was a 34-31 game. And, Capital had given Mountain Union trouble the past 2 seasons in the playoffs, but didn't give them any trouble this year in the regular season. When you look at the numbers from the Mountain Union game, they're just able to buckle down and do the things that they do well, do the things that they need to do to win as well. Nate Kamik rushing for 220 yards in that first round playoff game, and then Greg McKaylee 19 of 24 passing just shows that not saying that they weren't taking a lot of risk, but that they're very careful with the ball and completing the passes that they threw.
The last 8th seed that we haven't referenced yet, Olivet falling at Central by the score of 38-17. Central, has had a couple of great regular seasons, but this was actually Central's first playoff win since 2000.
Yeah, well, last year they got kind of stuck with that matchup in the first round against St. John's when St. John's lost on week 11 to Bethel and then ended up being one of the last teams, if not the last team, into the playoff field. And that's a tough draw in the first round. This year they got a different draw, not as tough a draw in 6-4 Olivet, the champion of the MIAA. But it wasn't a blowout completely.
No, nonetheless, Olivet still had a lead, 14-10 in the second quarter. Central came back with 3 consecutive touchdowns, kind of took control early of the third period of that game. A big interception thrown by Olivet might have been what turned the tide in that game. Looking at some of the 7 seeds, we talked about the fact that the North bracket was broken up a little bit. 8 was playing 1, or 8 was playing 2. In this case, that meant that Capital, the 7 seed, was playing first-seeded Wisconsin-Whitewater. And the final score in that one may be a little bit misleading. It was 34-14.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily a blowout from minute one in that game. You know, Capital was able to hang and do some things, but they turned the ball over five times. And I think that's what we haven't necessarily focused on when we talk about Whitewater this season, because they had the coaching turnover, new offensive coordinator, new quarterback, and then the star running back, a guy who's going to be probably in line for some postseason awards here in Justin Beaver. But this defense, led by linebacker A.J. Rabel, has really had a great season generating turnovers, and they showed that in the first round, generated five turnovers against Capital, and Jim Collins said it right after the game. He said turnovers were killers.
Yeah, turnovers killers also for Mary Hardin-Baylor earlier in the season against Whitewater. That was a game Saturday against Capital that was close until Whitewater blew it out in the fourth quarter. The other seven seed, Hartwick, falls at Curry 42-21. Really didn't know what to make of this game. It was like coming into the game, it was like, do we know what Hartwick is capable of doing on the road? We didn't think they were the best team in the Empire 8, and clearly Saturday handing the NAFC their first win, and Curry had a lot of short drives.
Well, yeah, but going back to what you said about Hartwick, you know, they were a team that was a little bit confusing this season, 8-2, and the champion of the Empire 8, beating St. John Fisher, a team that was a top 10 team at the time and worked its way back into the top 10 at the end of the season, and a team that we think is probably the next strongest team in that bracket besides Mountain Union. But also, Hartwick was a team that lost their first game. We keep going back to that, on the road against Western New England, 48-21, you know, a result that baffled a lot of people, and also lost to Alfred during the season. And the thing that happened Saturday really was Curry just jumped on him from the opening kick. Tim, I can't even say his last name.
We're going to apologize here.
Yeah, sorry, Tim. It's Blionas.
Tim Blonish.
That you got a better
yes.
We'll have to figure that one out. We'll get it straight before next week.
Send us a voicemail.
Anyway, he returned the opening kickoff 83 yards for a touchdown. Curry got the ball back not long after that. A 5-play 42-yard drive, then a 5-play 17-yard drive, and a 1-play 16-yard drive. These are all in the first quarter for Curry to go up 28-0. And by that point for Hartwick, they're just working from behind and trying to get anything done.
Yeah, Curry's remaining scoring drives included a one-play 5-yard drive, and then they had just one long scoring drive in the second quarter, or in the second half. Two plays, 98 yards, ending in an 85-yard touchdown pass, a game in which Hartwick was just hopelessly behind and had no chance of coming back. The other seven seed, Concordia, Wisconsin, going down to Bethel 28-0, and I guess a fond farewell to the Illini Badger Football Conference.
Yeah, well, the Illini Badger never quite got its traction as a league in the playoffs, and you know, when you come in, you're beating each other up a little bit during the season. You don't get a really good playoff matchup, and Concordia coming in as a 7 seed with 3 losses had to go to Bethel, a team that was coming off a big win against St. John's, and probably just as confident as any other team in the playoffs. And you know, we didn't quite know what to make of Bethel, and I don't know if that necessarily laid it all out for us. You know, the 28-0 win, well, it looked like they maybe called off the dogs a little bit there at the end. But, you know, for the Illini Badger, those teams are going to go their separate ways next year, joining the SLEAC. I guess we'll have to explain what all the acronyms mean. That's the St. Louis Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. They'll have... let's see, a team joining, they'll join what?
The Northern Athletics
Conference. Right, with the Northern Athletics Conference, which is going to be some of the UMAC teams. So everybody's going to go their separate ways, and it was the IBFC was a, you know, football-only league that never had a really great moment in the playoffs. I guess they had a chance when Aurora went toe-to-toe with that Worcester team in 2004, that the team that had Tony Sutton, who was probably one of the best players in the country that season, if not the best, and they went back and forth there at the end, and Worcester pulled it out 41-34. But other than that, the Illini Badger never did get a playoff win.
In the up to the 6 seeds, Wisconsin-Eau Claire, victor against St. Norbert by the score of 24-20, and St. Norbert and the Midwest Conference's playoff struggles continue.
Yeah, but that's a tough one for the Midwest and for St. Norbert, because they had that game, they were leading with a minute left. Eau Claire scored, I believe, with 46 seconds left on the clock, and you know, just lost among Saturday's myriad great finishes was that one, because it wasn't either as dramatic as you know, North Carolina Wesleyan knocking off Washington Jefferson, or Case Western Reserve scoring with 2 seconds left, TCNJ missing a field goal in the final 2 minutes and then coming back and kicking it with 12 seconds left. You know, there were so many great finishes, we almost forgot about this one. And it was Chris Hull, 28-yard touchdown pass to Mitch Schoble with 46 seconds left. That ended up being the difference in that game. And must be pretty tough to be St. Norbert to have a WIAC team on the ropes in the playoffs, something that they can use going back, you know, in recruiting, saying that, hey, we're the program that's picking it up a level. We can play with WIAC teams. And maybe they'll still be able to say that, but that doesn't probably give them much solace this week, losing a four-point game in the playoffs.
Yeah, and we don't have time to touch on everything that happened in the final 6 minutes of that game, but you should definitely check out the game story on the website to see a little bit more about the way the end of that game went down. Other side of the bracket, 6th seed Mount St. Joseph falls at 3rd seed Wabash, 31-21.
And that was one of the games from Saturday that there wasn't a whole lot to say about it, because it sort of, you know, wasn't a dramatic finish, wasn't a blowout, wasn't too much of a surprise. We thought Wabash would be about a couple touchdowns better than Mount St. Joseph's, which was a Pool C team, had a common opponent with Wabash and Franklin, and that was one of the ones that went as expected.
Up elsewhere in the bracket, 6th seeded Trinity falls at Mary Hardin Baylor to 52-23.
And that's the Texas sub-bracket. Those teams, you got to play another Texas team to get out of Texas every year. And actually, Mary Hardin Baylor is going to be staying in Texas with the 8th seed winning at Washington Jefferson. They'll get a home game next weekend. UMHB doing what it does, rolled up 457 yards rushing. And Jarvis Thrasher finished with 205 yards and 3 touchdowns on 21 carries. And he actually tied the ASC single-season record with 23 touchdowns, and you know he's been doing that all year. But what we're going to look at in the playoffs is what we looked at going back to that Whitewater game. Can Mary Hardin Baylor do it against teams from other conferences?
One of the other things we're going to look at, of course, for Mary Hardin Baylor is hosting a game next week against North Carolina Wesley. Now that the top seed is out of this bracket, Mary Hardin Baylor gets a second home game, and then the winner of the Muhlenberg-Wesley game will host the regional final. The last 6th seed that we haven't referenced yet, although we touched on it earlier, College of New Jersey defeating RPI 17-14.
And that just one of Saturday's great dramatic finishes. College of New Jersey, a team that, you know, didn't expect a whole lot from in the beginning of the season, lost that game to Muhlenberg to start the year, and then just built momentum with a lot of close wins. You know, they beat Rowan 10-7, they beat Montclair, I think, 19-9, and built that momentum and was used to being in close games. So when it came down to the final minutes on Saturday, you know, even missing a kick that had a chance to, I believe, win the game, not losing their cool. You miss that kick, that's your playoffs, that's your season, you think. You could be devastated. And even though the game was still tied at that point, they were able to get a stop, regroup, get the ball back, and kick the field goal with 12.8 seconds left.
Matt D'Alessio from 27 yards out, capping a 35-yard drive on 6 plays that took pretty much the entire last minute and 39 of the contest. And you almost have to kind of harken back in that game to a possession earlier on in the fourth quarter. RPI took over at their own one. Big pass completion from Jimmy Robertson to Brendan McGowan for 83 yards, got into the red zone, knocked it down to within the 7 at a 4th and 1, ended up going for it. Instead of kicking a field goal, which would have been about a 24-yarder, a kick that would have put them would have given them 17 points, would have put them up 17-7, and would have meant that TCNJ would have been kicking to tie instead of kicking to win.
Well, not only that, you know, at that point, you may even change, TCNJ may change how it calls the game because they're down 10 instead of down 7. You know, when you're down 7, you can sort of, you know, you need that drive, but you can establish what you want to do because you only need to score once, whereas they might have been rushing if they were down 10 points. So that's a very big situation. You know, that drive that tied the game for the Lions was 12 plays, 90 yards in 4 minutes and 4 seconds, and with only 7 minutes left in the game, you know, they're taking their time mixing the run and the pass.
Moving on to the 4-5 games, although you know some of the 5 seeds didn't play for us. One of them, the less interesting one, Redlands goes to St. John's and loses 41-13.
Yeah, we thought that might be a pretty good game. Redlands had a nice season, went up to Whitworth to start the year and beat Whitworth, and had played St. John's tough in the past. So, you know, maybe, I don't want to say had the book on them, but had at least seen, you know, the coaching staff, some of the same guys had seen them before, and you think maybe they have an idea what to do against St. John's, but St. John's just used their offensive talent, put a flurry of 17 points there right at the end of the first half to give the Johnnies a big lead going into the half, and Redlands could never recover.
In fact, that end of second quarter flurry was so unexpected that the person who was spotting the scores for us for that game sent us 3 different halftime scores. So thank you, Adam Johnson. We appreciate that. The other 4-5 game, much more interesting and entertaining, as North Central survives the back-and-forth battle and wins, defeating Franklin 44-42 as time expired.
Yeah, and one of the real interesting things about the way that game ended was on that final drive for North Central, a couple of high school teammates hooking up a couple times, including on that last second 19-yard touchdown catch. That was from Aaron Fanthorpe, the quarterback, to Steve Hlavak.
And North Central continues, I guess, the Heartland Conference's woes in the playoffs. Although, it's to say the Heartland getting 2 teams in for the first time, it kind of acquitted itself pretty well this season in the playoffs, even though they lost both games.
Yeah, well, didn't get blown out either time and had a couple of tough matchups at Wabash and against North Central. You know, the thing about a conference, kind of making those steps, is it doesn't come right away necessarily, and for the Heartland to get 2 teams in shows the respect that I think that conference has begun to earn, and you know, maybe next year or the year after when they get a victory, then it starts to get over that hump and becomes a much more respected conference. You know, Franklin's going to go out on the recruiting trail this year and say, hey, we had a playoff game against a team from a strong conference in the CCIW and had them on the ropes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and not only does it not come right away, but it doesn't come from just one team making that step up to the next level. It has to be multiple teams making an improvement.
Yeah, because competition makes everybody better. And, you know, when you talk about that Ohio Athletic Conference, even though it may not have shown this year, a lot of years when those secondary teams, not Mountain Union, have gone into the playoffs and done well, they said it's directly attributable to how well Mountain Union does, because everybody in that conference has to pick up their level of play just to try to compete with the regular games they schedule in the regular season, and it ends up helping them in the playoffs.
The another 5 seed was Hobart losing at St. John Fisher 24-7, a final score that's a little bit surprising.
Well, because we thought Hobart had come in on such a roll offensively, averaging 40 points, I think, over their last 7 games coming into the playoffs, and Fisher having a lot of offensive talent. We thought that would be a shootout, and it was a 3-0 game at the half, and then the teams traded scores a little bit in the third and early fourth. Hobart cut it to 17-7 with 6:24 left, and then Fisher put together the finishing score on it. But I don't know exactly what the weather was like, but it maybe that had an effect on the game, because it certainly wasn't. Maybe it was just a great defense on both sides, and that's something that sometimes when you see one team, the talent that they have, which is something that we'll get to when we get to the Salisbury game, the other 5 seed, you know, you think this side of the ball is going to do the damage, and sometimes it's the other side of the ball where the difference is made.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about that game, because we certainly know what the weather was like at that game, and, you know, Salisbury, you know, struggled in the first quarter. Muhlenberg did some things on offense that maybe Salisbury wasn't prepared for, or Salisbury took a little bit of time to adjust. Once they did, they held them off the scoreboard until the fourth quarter. They just couldn't hang on to the football when it counted.
Yeah, that was really, really big for Salisbury. You know, going to their bread and butter, trying to run the option and just kind of sort of pitching the ball all over the place and fumbling. The key plays in that game were the 2 fumbles late in the fourth quarter. Salisbury had finally gotten it to 21-21, tied it up, had trailed the whole day, you know, I think came out a little bit anxious, eager, whatever you want to call it, a little off their game, trying to do maybe too much. Muhlenberg came out, they were sharp from the get-go. Everything that they had drew up was working, and it really took Salisbury a little bit of time to figure everything out, and then, you know, it was sort of a shame for them because they got it figured out, and then they put the ball on the ground there in the fourth quarter, and Muhlenberg took advantage.
looking ahead at what's coming up in the second round on Saturday. East Region 6 seed College New Jersey at number 1 seed Mount Union. Ithaca acquitted itself well for the East Region. College New Jersey, you know, from the people that we had at the game, sounded like TCNJ had all sorts of time to work on offense. They're not going to get that kind of luxury back there in the pocket against Mount Union.
I got a pretty good feeling this is going to be a defensive struggle, not in the sense that Mount Union is going to get shut down, you know, single digits or anything like that, but both teams really have strong defenses, and it's probably going to be tough for TCNJ, a team that hasn't put up a ton of points this year, to score a lot of points. But they may hold Mount Union off for a couple quarters or make it difficult, at least for Mount Union to score.
Curry at St. John Fisher.
Well, you figure St. John Fisher is the much more highly touted team coming in, but after what Curry did last week, playing confidently and having beat a team that beat St. John Fisher during the season, you know, you never know what could happen.
We will have our picks later in the week, Friday, on the Triple Take. In the West bracket, St. John's at Central, it seems like these teams meet a whole heck of a lot.
Well, that happens when you're in the West, and that part of the West where you don't have to fly, and you're two power teams that are almost always in the playoffs, to be quite honest, Central and St. John's. That could be an interesting game because St. John's, I think, has a lot of offensive firepower. Central, sort of the same way, and both teams experienced in the playoffs, and in Central's case, experienced in close game, so if it gets into a situation where that comes down to the fourth quarter, you know, Central's going to be used to that.
Bethel finally gets the playoff monkey off its back, and now they host Wisconsin-Eau Claire. You know, Bethel has certainly had its first-round struggles in the playoffs before, but they acquitted themselves pretty well against the WIAC runner-up last year against La Crosse.
And I think they're coming in rolling now. You beat St. John's and also had a pretty big win in October against St. Olaf. And I'm sure getting that playoff monkey off the back, they're feeling good about themselves. Eau Claire, on the other hand, had to scrape out a win against St. Norbert. So, I mean, yeah, you have to look at Bethel as a favorite in that game. But whenever you match a MIAC team and a WIAC team, you know, it's a pretty good matchup.
It will be all speed all the time, I guess. And 8th seed North Carolina Wesleyan goes to 4th seed Mary Hardin Baylor.
Yeah, and those teams have a common opponent in Christopher Newport that they both beat. The big thing is going to be how is North Carolina Wesleyan going to stop Mary Hardin Baylor's rushing attack.
Elsewhere in that bracket, Muhlenberg travels to Wesley.
Well, we saw Muhlenberg on Saturday, and we thought their defense was very legit. And again, a common opponent in Salisbury, a team that Wesley only beat by 7 points, and Muhlenberg beat by 10 on Saturday. So you just by comparative scores, you think those teams could match up well. Muhlenberg doesn't have the speed to stay with Wesley, but they might have the power up front. I mean, the way they brought blitzes and the way they got pressure just from their defensive line against Salisbury showed that they could do a lot of things defensively to disrupt Wesley.
North Central travels to Whitewater in the North bracket.
Well, North Central's going to have to avoid turnovers because every team that we've seen playing Whitewater recently has gotten itself in trouble on the strength of the Whitewater defense.
And the last game is third-seeded Wabash at second-seeded Case.
And that's one where, you know, it's tough to know what to make of it because Case, I don't want to say struggled against Widener. You know, they stayed in that game, but they were kicking field goals, and they had to put a drive together at the end. And it's still kind of hard to tell what kind of team Case is, you know, besides Tom Brew, their big middle linebacker.
Case did have Whalen back at quarterback last week, which you'd have to think might have been the difference in the game.
It's always nice to have the guy that you dance with who brung you, as they say. And for Wabash, you know, they want to hope they can spread Case out and do what they do offensively.
Those are your second round matchups, but really, you know, the first round is always kind of a unique weekend. It's like it's kind of like, you know, the first day of March Madness in the Division I men's basketball tournament, where you got games coming down all over the place, and to have all those games at once was certainly kind of a distracting experience, shall we say, as we're trying to concentrate on the game we're calling on the field.
Well, I thought it was a little bit of a rush. It was pretty cool because some of those games were such tight games that, you know, you turn your head for a second and the score changes. And, you know, because there was no game hosted on the West Coast yesterday, all those games either kicked off at 12 Eastern yesterday, I'm sorry, Saturday, all those games kicked off either 12 Eastern or 1 Eastern. And, you know, so for 2 hours on Saturday, they were going, all 16 games are going on simultaneously.
An impressive experience, of course, down to 8 games this weekend, but we know that we'll be going to be in line for some good games, too. We got, it's about the time in the tournament where, you know, the teams that are getting the automatic bids from the lower-ranked conferences, the lower seeds are knocked out of the bracket, and we get some really knocked-down, drag-out games at this point, usually.
Yeah, the mismatches sometimes happen in the first round because you got one seeds and eight seeds. You got three loss and four loss teams getting into the playoffs from year to year. But usually, in starting getting to 16 and 8, the matchups get much tighter, and we're going to have, we think, a lot of really good games this Saturday.
That's our Around the Nation podcast for the 19th of November. Don't forget to check back at d3football.com throughout the week. We'll give Keith a week off for Thanksgiving and Around the Nation, but keep an eye out for features on teams from each bracket as the week progresses.